Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on June 12th. And it feels more like August 12th out there. It is so hot and muggy, but that's wonderful, isn't it? It's finally summertime again, up and down and up and down. Actually, I know it's summertime because yesterday, I spent a couple of hours, 3 hours, well, 9:30, 12:30, yeah, 3 hours out at the club, but the range. But what I did was not shooting. I was actually taking the Fist Queen down off of the pistol house because when it is that hot and that muggy, you need all the airflow you can through there. So now the pistol house is back, you know, fully ventilated, everybody. So you're welcome to come on out. Let's see. We have got some gun shows. There's actually only one gun show in Michigan, the original Grand Rapids Gun and Knife Show at the 4 Mile Showplace in Grand Rapids. And Ohio's got a few. The Flag City Toys That Shoot Air Gun Show. Yes, one of the few air gun shows around. And that's outstanding. So, and nowadays, since you can't find ammo, air guns are a good way to practice. Okay, actually, I did some interesting ballistics testing with 22 caliber ammo on one of the guns that I have, one of the air guns that I have. And there's like a lot of different sizes and shapes and everything of the ammo you can get for air guns. And there's, you know, ones with little points, ballistic tips on them. And there's ones that are, quote, armor piercing that have like a BB in the, I mean, it's pretty cool stuff. And they range from like 7.3, maybe 5.7 grains up to like 15 or 18 grains or something like that. So you can have, just like in regular powder guns, you can have heavy and slow or light and fast. And I want to say the accuracy is the same kind of thing. Sometimes light is good, sometimes it's not good. So the only thing is that I'm testing them all in the same air gun, so with the same rifling and stuff. So I don't know how much it would be affected by a different twist rate or something like that. But you can have a lot of fun with an air gun, and you can have a lot of accurate practice with it. So do not discount them. Now, the ammo is, I want to say it didn't used to be so much cheaper than 22 ammo, but that was back when 22 ammo was reasonable, okay, when you could get 550 rounds for $8 or something at Walmart. But nowadays, because you're paying a lot more than that for a brick of 22, it still is a relative bargain out there. Let's see. Also, the Medina Gun Show in Medina, Ohio, and the Lake County Gun Show at Painesville, Ohio, the Lake County Gun Show Fairgrounds. Missouri's actually canceled their R.K. St. Charles Gun Show. I don't know why. So the only one in Missouri got closed. And this is actually a neat kind of place that New York has a gun show today. So Mike out in Long Island, I don't know where Little Falls, New York is, but they actually call it the Bear Arms Outdoor Sportsman's Gun Swap Meet. So what a hilarious play on, you know, the right to keep and bear arms. This is called Bear, B-A-R-E, Arms. And it's actually called Bear Arms Gun Shop. And it shows the sign has like a bear. So it's a good play on it, okay? Bear Arms Bear Arms Gun Shop, and it's Bear Arms, Little Falls, New York. So at any rate, numbers are the same. We're at 751,000 on our CPLs. And I wanted to say, I was doing some research because last week we had a listener and his call intrigued me about carcanos, okay? And so I was looking up, and there are some relative bargains out there in the Carcano world. You can get them at like Palmetto State Arms or at Royal Tiger Imports. They've got a lot of different ones. They had some that were carbine length ones, but they're sold out of those right now. They were only like $264. They have some that are like 3.5 and stuff like that. Same thing with Palmetto Arms. And you can get them in varying conditions. I want to say the Royal Tiger Import ones intrigue me because they are from that Ethiopian reserve of firearms that they found over there, and that they are cleaning up and selling. And it seems I want to say they're in pretty neat condition. So at any rate, let's see. The thing about it, though, is that I was a little, I don't want to say mistaken, but I had hoped when the listener said, well, they're 6.5 by 62, I think, no, by 52 or 53 millimeters, 6.5 by 52 millimeter cartridge. And I'm thinking, well, that's not that far off from like a 6.5 Creedmoor. I wonder what kind of, you know, accuracy you could work out with those. You could maybe load them up with, you know, some of these extremely low drag bullets, and you could maybe have an interesting kind of a on the cheap long distance rifle. Well, that may not be the case, okay? And the reason is that the 6.5 Carcano shoots a bullet that is a 0.268 diameter, okay? And most of the commonly available 6.5 ammo, like they use in 6.5 Creedmoor and things like that, are 0.264, a little bit smaller diameter. Now, you might go, well, that's only, you know, 4 or 10 thousandths. That's not much. But it can make a difference. And so what happens is, or 4 thousandths, what can happen is that the you don't have the accuracy that you would have on the bullet that the diameter is actually designed for the barrel. So the other thing I was noting is that the 6.5 Carcano rounds have that extremely long, which led me to believe that you can get some decent low drag bullets for it, but no, extremely long bullet length. And so you have to consider that the length of the case, the length of the bullet, and the jump, okay, the jump is the distance between where the bullet starts, let's say, and where it jumps to the through the chamber to the barrel and where the rifling starts, okay? And so you pretty much have to go with the length that they designed the thing for. Turns out that Hornady does make a 0.268 bullet, okay? I think it's 160 grain, but it is a round nose soft point, and it's like a big, long, blunt bullet. So you're not going to end up with the extremely low drag that I was hoping you were going to get. Doesn't mean it couldn't be a fun shooter and have a good time with it. However, it's not going to be able to interchange bullets with a 6.5 Creedmoor. So at any rate, here's a story. My wife mentioned this morning while I was doing some show prep and eating breakfast. And she said, did you see this story about a woman's car got shot on Judd Road here in Saline? I said, no, I didn't know that. And so I looked it up, and it's interesting because this is not an occurrence that happens very often when somebody has an errant shot and matter of fact, it looks absolutely like it was something that was ricocheting because there's a picture of it in the Saline Post. And it's elongated like an oval shape. So it was probably tumbling. And she said it didn't go through the interior door trim panel. Of course, it could have hit the reinforcement or something too. But the point is that it didn't intrude into the interior of the car, but it did make a hole in the door. And there's a couple of things about this that's interesting. One is that the response is, well, people are known to target shoot in the area and stuff like that, and but, you know, normally nothing that gets off the property and blah, 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 blah. Well, yes, and apparently there were people shooting. This happened on Sunday afternoon. So whoever was target shooting on Judd Road in Saline on Sunday afternoon, you have to be careful, a little more careful. You are responsible for where your projectile goes, okay? Not just straight, but it could be a ricochet. It could be a skip off the ground. It could have hit us. Maybe you were shooting steel or something like that, and it ricocheted off. So you are responsible for where that projectile goes. You have to know what your target is and know what's behind it. And also, what may not be behind it, it might be more off to the side, but ricochets, okay? So I find it interesting, though. I'm reading a story, and a York Township woman reported that her vehicle was struck by a bullet as she was driving on Judd Road. Deborah Tutak was westbound on Judd Road approaching the stop sign at Saline Milan Road when she heard a loud explosion on the driver's side of her vehicle. So that means it was somebody shooting south off of Judd Road. So let's see. No, she was heading west. I'm sorry, shooting north off of Judd Road. She got out of her car to see what made the noise, but didn't notice that there was a hole in the door until later when she got home. So she called the Washtenaw County Sheriff's, and they couldn't shed much more light on the incident. I mean, obviously, it happened. Jackson said there is a home on Saline Milan Road known to have target practice shooting. And so, okay, if you know who that is, just be careful. You know, maybe the person is, I got to tell you, I'm sure the person is not aware of it, and that's no excuse for it, but we all have to be responsible. It could be that, you know, you may have been shooting there for 50 years, but now there's homes and more traffic and stuff like that. So you have to be careful. Now, I don't know how Derek got involved, but York Township trustee Derek Stern was glad there were no injuries. He forwarded details of the incident to the supervisor and said he'd follow up with the incident on the incident with the Washtenaw County Sheriff's Office. Stern said the issue will be addressed at the next York Township meeting. Well, I got to tell you guys, we've already been through this years ago, not because of an incident of an off-property bullet of somebody shooting in their own private home, but that was when somebody was having a shoot that was very noisy and stuff, and there were people complaining about it. You know, this is the United States of America. We have a Second Amendment. You have the ability to target shoot on your own property, but you have to be safe. Okay, so I got to say there's nothing for the York Township trustee or the supervisor to be doing about this, because this is the United States of America. So at any rate, speaking of that, that's for now, okay? Because here I am going to talk about some politics this week. Oh, I know, we hate politics. But you have to talk about it because you have to be aware of what's going on. And last week, actually, Ed Bondaranco called up about the incident and we'll talk about that more, the Ninth Circuit Court out in California and the California federal judge declaring that the assault weapons ban was unconstitutional. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But the Democrats file federal gun licensing and registration bill. Oh, yeah, here we go. One of the worst fears for gun owners is gun registration. And the reason is that once firearms are registered, it's much easier to confiscate them. We've seen how this shakes out elsewhere, and it always ends up the same end result with the registration scheme. Well, up until now, the Democrats have been smart enough to steer clear of this at the national level, okay? And while it may play well in an anti-gun state like California or something, it doesn't do well in the rest of the United States as a whole. But it seems those days are over, because now a group of Democrats in Congress this month have filed legislation that seeks to set new, much more restrictive standards for even the most basic handgun ownership in the United States. Now, that's if you're out in the whole United States, you go, what? Handgun registration? Well, we're one of the eight stupid states that makes you have a handgun registration. Michigan does right now. They don't in Ohio, and they don't in Indiana and other many other places. But in some states, they do. Okay, and Michigan's one of those. And it, I want to say it started out. Who remembers when we used to have to take our handguns in to have a safety check when you bought it? Even if it's a brand new handgun out of the box from Ruger, Smith & Wesson, Colt, or something like that, you had to take it into the police department, or local, might have been Pittsfield Township or Washtenaw County Sheriff's or something, and have them check the gun, okay? Well, some of them took them very seriously. I got to say, I knew the officer, the sergeant at Pittsfield Township that used to do the safety check, and he actually checked to make sure things appeared to be, you know, no, especially on used guns, but no cracks, that the chambering, you know, it went into battery correctly and all that kind of stuff. So that probably served some purpose if you're going to have a safety check. Other places, the main reason was to get the serial number off the firearm so they could register it to you. Okay, just so happens that they registered it while they were doing their, quote, safety check. Okay, well, they got rid of that. And the thing is, and nowadays you still have to do the registration here, but you don't do the safety check anymore. So that kind of shows you what the real purpose of that was. But this group of Democrats want to do it for everywhere in the United States, as you know, because that's the thing. We don't know who's got the guns and where they are. Exactly. That's the point. Okay. So, and then they go on, they go, representative, what's her name? Bonnie Watson of New Jersey Democrat. Imagine that, a gun control bill by a New Jersey Democrat. Who would have guessed, okay? But our government requires registration and basic standards for voting, operating a vehicle, even opening a business, said Representative Bonnie Watson. Okay, that's kind of ironic that you would talk about registration and stuff for voting. Because aren't you the guys that want anybody who walks in to be able to vote? Or you want a whole bunch of unfolded mimeographed, who remembers the term mimeographed? Remember that? That's A.B. Dick. They spun the thing. Remember working in the office in high school and they'd sit there with those machines that went round and round and it smelled, that ink smelled terrible, right? But you're gonna claim that, well, guns should be registered because, you know, you have to register to vote. Well, wait a minute. I thought you have same day registrations. You have people that can just say, I am who I am. I get to do a provisional vote. Yes, I do. So you're going to claim that you have to have because you have to have registration and basic standards for voting, that you should have registration for guns. I don't think so. By the way, weapons created. Then she said, yet weapons created with a single intent to take a life. We have developed a dangerous aversion to any mechanism to understand where and to whom these weapons reside. Oh, yes, it's an insidious plot. Well, it's actually so that people like you, Bonnie Watson, are not out there, because the next step will be, well, we need to pick these things up. We can't have these people out there with these guns. So it's funny. But there's no training required to vote or open a business. Okay. But you want to have it for driving. So we do. So we should have training. So see, there's the next step. It's not just registration. Then it's going to be required voting, required training and all that kind of stuff for all of it. And you got to remember that gun ownership is a right, and it's been established by the courts and Heller. They found it to be an individual right, not a militia right or something like that. So any costs incurred in trying to meet requirements like this, whether it's a fee for the license, we know that, folks, or cost for the training course, constitutes the equivalent of a poll tax, okay? So, yeah, this is a horrible bill, and it probably won't get anywhere, okay? Because right now, the Democrats can't even get measures through the Senate that seem to poll well enough with the American public. But gun registration does not poll well with the general public. So probably it won't get out of the House and to the Senate. So that's a good thing. But they showed our their true colors right there. Let's see. Philadelphia sued again for withholding carry permits. It's interesting because these are I want to say what they've done is they have continued to use things like the pandemic requirements and stuff in order to I want to say, if you haven't been reading like Breitbart and stuff, they are really coming down on Gretchen Whitmer right now because of all the stuff that she's done. And actually, Dana Nessel, there's emails. Boy, don't these folks know that their emails are going to show up eventually? I guess they probably thought they had the same privileges that Hillary did with her emails. But Dana Nessel had an email out there where she, do you remember that restaurant owner in Holland that they arrested and took her like 100 miles away because she supposedly was held her for 4 days and because she supposedly ignored an order to keep her restaurant closed. It turns out that Dana Nessel actually, she has emails out there that where she found out that Tucker Carlson or Fox News was going to interview her. And so she specifically said, we need to go get her and arrest her before she can be on Fox News. So the morning she was scheduled to be on Fox News, before dawn, they showed up to arrest her. So now if that's not using your power of your office to abuse the rights of people, I don't know what is. But at any rate, here's Philadelphia Police Department, that what's happened is they've gotten to where they're, oh, no, you can't come in and pick. No, yes, we've already approved your permit. Yes, you have your CPL has been approved, okay? But no, you have to make an appointment to come in and pick it up, okay? You have to come and pick it up in person. And because of the pandemic, we're making in-person appointments, but they're not available for like 100 days or more because, pandemic, right? Well, it actually violates a state law that requires that they need to be issued within 45 days of being submitted. But no. We're asking them to come in. Well, I got a great idea, okay? How about you put it in this federal envelope called the U.S. mail and mail it to the folks, okay? Like we do in Michigan here, by the way, okay? I got mine in 2 weeks, okay? Some people before the pandemic, we were getting them in 3 days, okay? So no. We have to, just like Detroit was doing that with their appointments for their interviews and stuff like that. Oh, no. No, we can, you, by the way, if you want to protest or do something like that, you're fine, okay? But no, if it's a appointment to pick up a CPL permit, which you shouldn't even need, okay, then you are going to have an appointment. And they were actually scheduling out like 13, 14 months for those appointments. Oh, that's amazing. So we'll see what happens. Again, the courts are going to get involved. Let's see. Deadline approaching for Abbott to sign constitutional carry. Do you know that the Texas, by the way, of any place that should have constitutional carry, it ought to be Texas, don't you think? Well, the House and Senate has sent a bill to Governor Abbott, Greg Abbott now, and he said before, oh, I'll sign it, but he is dragging it out. Okay, so we'll have to see what happens whether or not he actually decides to sign it, or if he says, well, I need a little change here or there, and it drags out further. And it's actually, there's a whole lot of pros and cons on both sides. There's law enforcement that are out there talking about how it will it'll be a problem for them to tell who's a felon and who's not. Well, how does that make a difference? We'll talk about that more when we get back from the break. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WHAM Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. I'll be back in a few minutes.
WHAM Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And I was just thinking, listening to the stuff in between, the promos and stuff like that on Theron's show. If you haven't listened to his Bone Conduction music show, or if you haven't listened to Friday's show, you know, now he does a great show from 3 to 6 every day of the week, or every weekday. But on Friday, he does what he calls the Alternative Bump Music Friday. And, you know, guys know what bump music is? Bump music is like, I use China Grove when we lead into the show. Sometimes, depending on whatever Derek's in the mood for, he'll pull up the one that uses Paul Revere and the Raiders and things like that. And actually, if we ever get back into doing things in the studio, I'll probably start mixing it up again. Because I always enjoyed doing that, different music from my youth and your youth. Many of you are similar age. And so, but you got to listen to that alternative. Derek, is it as much fun to do that show as it sounds like?
Oh, it definitely is. It's very fun all around. It's definitely a break from everyday politics, and it's a lot of fun to hear what Theron has in his library. Most of it, I have never heard of it before, but it's very interesting music, and it's fun.
He put that very diplomatic. It's interesting. Some of it is so funny, kind of different. Oh gosh, what was one of the ones? Oh, there's ones talking about divorce. Oh, there was one called yesterday. He was talking about getting a barstool PhD or something like that. I forget who sang that song. Do you remember who that was, Derek?
I can't remember offhand, but yeah, it's unique songs like that that make Alternative Bump Music Friday very enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, and so if you're dialing in thinking, oh, I got to get my daily dose of politics, well, you'll go, what's up? What's with all this music? And it is just be quiet, just listen to it. Oh yeah, he'll mix in some politics still. But then he's got these great songs at the lead in, and he'll play the full song, and it's a blast. So you got to do that. It's a lot of fun. And I would like to get, if we get back into the, I used to have fun doing that too, especially when I had the 2-hour show. I would do different things. Sometimes I would have people try to remember a song, or I'd play songs for that, you know, had guns in them, like I Fought the Law and the Law Won and Indiana Wants Me and things like that. But it doesn't lend itself as easy on the radio when we're doing it with Skype as it is when you are in the studio with Derek. So because I would come in with like a thumb drive and go, okay, this is the first break, the second break, the third break, and a lot of fun. We would have a good time. So let's talk about wheel guns, okay? Oh, man, why would I want to talk about those antiques? Well, actually, wheel guns are becoming more popular again. And by the way, nobody is out there trying to take away the wheel guns at this point. Although somebody has said, oh, well, we've got to limit the capacity on any handgun to less than 6. Got to be 5. So then you're going to have cylinders that only have 5 in them, unless you promise not to put more than 5 in them, like New York did with their SAFE Act. So, but let's say, okay, let's talk about the 586 or 686, which is the large framed 357 Magnum versus the Colt Python. Well, what's the most obvious thing? Well, besides the shape of the cylinder release level or the shape of the hammer spur or something like that, did you notice this even, that the cylinders rotate in different directions? Yes. The Colt, the cylinder rotates clockwise, and the Smith & Wesson, it rotates counterclockwise, okay? Oh, yeah. Now, who knows? The only time that matters is when you're trying to line something up for somebody, like, you know, to have them fire five rounds of 38 special in it and then go to a sixth round that is a 357 Magnum or something. That's the only time it really matters which way it turns. Otherwise, you could mix them up. But I want to say they are both beautiful guns. They both have outstanding triggers. I do say that I have not pulled the trigger on one of the new Colt Pythons. Now, I understand it's got some, you know, minor changes in it. And I do know that I have got a couple of Smith & Wesson revolvers that are, I have a newer 586, and it's one of the new classic series. And I can compare that to my older Smith & Wesson, like the, I have a 629, which is the, you know, Dirty Harry 44 Magnum. But there's no comparison in the trigger. The trigger on the 629 is much, much nicer. And I assume that the trigger on an original 586 or 686 would be just as nice as that 629. And the newer one, it's okay, but I don't like the sound of it, okay? It's got a tink to it. It sounds like a you know, when you pull it, it goes tink, 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 and it just sounds cheap to me. So I'm not a big fan of the trigger sound or the feel of the new 586. I know I like the old Colts. Does anybody out there have one of the newer Colt Pythons or new Anacondas or King Cobras or the ones that they are making since they started production back up again? I think it'd be interesting to know if that trigger feels the same. My other Colts, I have, oh gosh, four or five other Colt revolvers that are like police positives and other ones like that, but they're not the same as the Snake series, the Python and the Cobras and stuff like that. So I would be interested in knowing how those triggers felt to you guys. Okay. I want to say, gosh, there's a ton of advertising they were both aimed at service guns and things like that. And so they talk about reliability and different designs and stuff. We got Ed from Ypsilanti on the phone to talk about revolvers. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Dick. First off, you were talking about, you know, chambering a number of 38s and then a 357. I remember when my wife and I were qualifying for our CPL, and I was in one lane with the instructor, and Sherry was in the other lane, and she poked her head around and says, well, I'm out of ammunition. And she was shooting a gun. You may be familiar with an SP-301. Sorry, SPO. Tell me what it is.
SP-101.
Thank you. Boy, I had a Biden moment there for a second. SP-101. And so I said, sure. And I took her gun from her, and I loaded 530 or 438s in it and a 357 and set it up correctly for her. The instructor saw what I did and handed it back to her. So we're both standing behind her, and she didn't realize it. You know, it was like bang, 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 boom! The grin on her face was just precious. You know, like, oh, is it supposed to do that?
Oh, geez. Do you know what? I remember when I took my CPL course, I used SP-101 as well. And I was shooting mostly 38s, but then I went ahead and shot a 357 Magnum in it, and it was not my, I knew what to expect, okay? But you should have seen the other people down the line, and the guy next to me goes, he looks at me, and he goes, don't do that.
Well, as far as trigger pulls, I got to say, once again, ever since you recommended, you know, changing the springs and doing the Italian jobs on our triggers, just wonderful, wonderful. These guns just fire wonderful. My Security 6 and her 101. So thank you.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Yeah,
did you talk about the court ruling in California regarding assault weapons?
No, I didn't. And I was avoiding the politics today, but go ahead. You want to talk about it?
Well, it's just the same judge who I believe is a Trump appointee who struck down their high-capacity ban, I think it was a year and a half ago. He just struck down their quote-unquote assault weapons ban. And when you ask yourself, well, wait a minute, what's an assault weapon? And I don't mean the, you know, the standard, well, what do they mean by an assault weapon? Because I know guys who have AR-15s there. But you have to have a certain kind of foregrip and a certain kind of pistol grip, and you can't do this. And I think you can't have a collapsible stock. All these little things that you can have the basic AR-15, but you just can't. You couldn't have a high-cap mag. And now you can, but then you couldn't have these modifications, and it looks like now you can, and this is freedom.
Yeah. Well, and they, I think what I read, too, is that it's going to force another review, but they call it en blanc, which means that instead of it being a small group, it's going to have to be all the justices on the court. So we'll have to see. I don't know if the tactic it's kind of like, okay, he goes ahead and overrules them, and then it forces it to come back to the full group instead of a small group. So we'll see how that tactic works out.
Yeah, there's a 30-day injunction, so his ruling doesn't take effect until they get a chance to appeal in 30 days. But, right. Hey, it came through on High Cap Mag, so you know we can pray.
Yeah, they used to have things out there. I mean, you know, that's always so funny with the assault weapons. They by the way, did you see Chipman last week when Ted Cruz and somebody else too? They were trying to taunt him into saying, "What is your definition of a assault weapon?" And he would not answer.
Oh, right, the ATF guy, the new BATF guy. Yeah, well, that was precious. You're supposed to be an expert, and you can't say. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and
Derek has an audio clip of it. Maybe I don't know. I thought I sent it for you, but it may have gotten erased by now.
Oh no, there is an audio clip. You did send it, and I had already gotten it, and I talked about it last week too. The fact is that
I heard that
he doesn't want to be pinned down on it, because if he says it's such and such, then there'll be 100 people that'll come back and go, well, is it this, is it that, you know what I mean? So he was just being a typical politician. So
yep. All right,
and
show.
When they get into
their,
and they get into all their I forget the Carolyn whatever her name was who was always anti-assault weapon, and she could not describe what these evil features were. Like they go, well, what about this? And she goes, oh, is that the little thing in the back that flips up and the thingy, she called it. And it's like, okay, so you can't have a flash suppressor. Why? Okay. Because you're suddenly worried about whether or not you can see the flash of an assault weapon. Okay. You can't have a bayonet mount. Why? Because there's a whole lot of bayonet crime going on out there. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. So,
well, of course, yeah, there's what's-her-face. I can't remember. She's got the ugly face and wants to impeach Trump all the time. Beach Boy 5. And she's the one who said, yeah, I hefted an AR-15. They're heavy. And those 50-caliber bullets, you know, are nobody needs to fire those in an AR-15.
Yeah.
Good luck trying.
I did. I got a deer with a 50-caliber bullet in an AR-15 this year. So.
Wow.
Well, I have a Alexander Arms AR in 50 Beowulf. Look it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I was thinking 50 BMG. Yeah.
Yeah, no, not a BMG. That would be ridiculous.
You wouldn't have no shoulder.
Yeah, I know.
All okay. Right, great.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for listening. We've got Bob from Detroit on the phone with a comment about revolvers. Oh, good. I'm getting the revolver people calling in. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, you are. So I carried an old model Python, 79 Python, for a long time, and finally decided to put it on the shelf because it's getting a bit pricey, and I thought I'd replace it. And you forgot about one of the other good 357 Magnum 38. I replaced it with a Ruger GP100.
Oh,
and
yes.
I'll tell you, the trigger pull on that is just as nice as my old Python. I haven't tried the new Python, I must admit. But the old Python obviously had a really nice smooth trigger pull. But I like my Ruger.
I am a Ruger nut. I have the Ruger disease that I must buy every new one that comes out, it seems like. And the GP100 is outstanding, as were its old, some of the old, you know, Service 6s and things like that that they had made. They are tanks, but that's what you're looking for in a you can find a 357 Magnum that is lightweight. I mean, there are ones that are these air weights and stuff like that. But when you shoot them, they really sting, okay? But when you're holding something like a GP100 or a big 586 or a Python, it really helps soak up some of that energy, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, so anyway, I just thought I'd throw my 2 cents worth in for the Ruger connection there and add it to the discussion, I guess.
You know, I really like my love affair with Ruger revolvers started with in 1968 when we got a single six, you know, one of the 22s in single action. And all of them up through the line, the Blackhawks, the Super Blackhawks, the GP100 is a very modern, and by the way, they have a performance center that makes, you know, very, very fancy ones that are every bit the rival of the good top of the line Smiths and Colts. So I agree.
Yep.
Very good. Thanks for the call.
Okay, no problem. Thanks. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. So I should have thought. There really are some high-end revolvers like that. The Smiths, the Colts, the Rugers, especially, again, some of the fancy GP100s, some of the Blackhawks and Super Blackhawks are just outstanding. Now, those tend to be, there is one called a Red Hawk, too, that is a double action, so in the big bore. So there's an awful lot of choices out there. I also have some friends that have, I want to say, value-priced ones, okay? And sometimes the value-priced ones tend to be copies of some of the Smiths or Colts. I want to say and their quality has gone up and down over the years. It's in the up mode right now with Taurus. Taurus is pretty good. Another value-priced one that I want to say is rougher from a manufacturer standpoint, but if it's what you can afford, it's what you can afford, is a Rossi. And I have friends that have Rossis, and they really enjoy them, and they shoot them. I've seen some. there's a German company, I forget, but they are very, very rough, and they are almost like pop metal. You got to be careful with what you're going to buy. If you're going to find, do you know that a new Colt costs like $1,200, okay, $1,299, something like that. A new Smith & Wesson 586 and 686 cost $900 or so. These are good. If you see some that are on sale brand new for $399 or $359, take a good look at their manufacturer and their smoothness and things like that and the materials that they're made out of, okay? So let's see. Other than I was kind of joking about the fact that the cylinders revolve in different directions, I want to say there's a lot of things, different features and stuff, but they all are so close. Oh gosh, the front sight on a Colt has two pins in it, and on a Smith & Wesson, it's only got one pin. You know, little things like that. But you know what? It doesn't really matter. And I want to say the other thing is the cylinder release on a Smith & Wesson, you push forward, and on a Colt, you pull it back. Does that make any difference? No. Not once you're used to it, okay? I mean, it's just like the controls on a Glock versus a Smith versus a Beretta versus whatever. You're going to end up getting used to the gun that you have and that you carry and you work with it. That's one of the reasons that a lot of people will only carry a single gun. I have a couple different ones I carry. And I want to say it mostly depends on what I'm wearing. some that are pocket guns with pocket holsters if I'm wearing dress pants or something, some that are very thin and can go in a, I have a Springfield XDS that I carry that is an inside the waistband that goes like jeans with a shirt over it, and it tucks in really neat. You can't tell it's there. Or sometimes I want to go retro, and I'll carry a 1911, or I'll carry a big revolver. Sometimes a little revolver. I guess I have. Oh man, I have too many. No, I almost said it. I almost said I have too many guns. Not true. You can never have too many guns. Okay. Let's see, as close as you can get to custom right out of the box. I want to say that the Colts and the Smith & Wessons can have various things in common, like the length of the underlug. What's that? Well, an underlug is the part that's like a shroud on the bottom of the barrel that that encases the ejector, and some of them are only half length and some of them are full length. Normally, that whether they're going to be half or full depends on weight and what you want to, if you want more weight in the front or not. I'm just looking at a very interesting one somebody had. They call it a Smolt. It's a Smith & Wesson 686 that they put a Python barrel on. Holy cow, does that look weird? So it's a Smith & Wesson and a Colt together, and they're calling it a Smolt revolver. It's pretty pretty interesting what people will do with these things. You can get them in blued or stainless. I want to say that you can get them in 3-inch barrels. You can get them in 4, 5. My 586 is in a 4-inch barrel. My 6 is pretty long for a 357. It's about right for a 44 Magnum, though. Let's see. The shapes of the hammers are a little bit different, but they're both wide. They both have wide triggers, things like that. We've got Tom from Detroit with a comment about an M1 Garand. Oh, gee, I'm almost out of time to talk about them today. Tom, what's your comment?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to real quick say I noticed on the Hornady Powder Company on their webpage, on their reloading data, they have a section on loads developed especially for M1 Garand, and there's loads on there actually for up to 180 grain bullet. So, you know,
reduce power loads.
The rule of thumb,
right?
Is that don't ever buy ammo with heavier than 165 grain because of the danger of bending the op rod. But yeah, I just thought I'd pass that on.
Well, that's neat. I was going to talk about M1 Garands today, and I'm running out of time because I'm having fun talking about revolvers. But I do, the Garand is, I found an article, and it looked like a new article, but it was actually a reprint of one from 2012, and it just talks about all the wonderful benefits of a Garand. And it did make me think about that with the ammunition. And that is why some of the manufacturers, American Eagle in particular, manufactures a specific M1 Garand loading. Not a recipe to reload, but M1 Garand ammunition. So that is one thing you have to consider. Very good. Thanks for the call, Tom.
You're welcome.
We will talk about the Garands next week. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to. It's not one of these teasers where somebody says, tune in next week. But tune in next week, and we will talk about M1 Garands next week. Maybe a little bit of M1 Carbines, too. Oh, gosh. I think next week will be Surplus Rifle Week. Okay? Let's talk about that next week. This is Dick Tupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. I'll see you next week.